Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Angel's Top Telemarketing Trends podcast. I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Owen Martin, who is the Senior Marketing Manager for Donor Recruitment at the RSPCA. Hey.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. How are you doing?
Good. Yeah, all good, thank you. Never done anything like this before, so excited to see how it goes.
Yeah, no pressure at all. And I guess before we get stuck into the detail of campaigns and all things RSPCA, I guess I should ask you how the golf swing is and how your golf game is going at the moment, because I know we both take a keen interest.
Yeah, let's not spend too much time on my golf swing. It's terrible. I'm still enjoying golf, so that's the main thing.
Yeah, exactly. I guess with the brighter weather, it just makes a nice change of scenery to get out on the golf course, even if the golf isn't quite as good as you imagine.
Yeah, definitely.
That's my take on it anyway. No, I digress. Obviously, we've worked together for a long, long time at between Angel and the RSPCA, so I'm really keen to share with the audience, you know, the insights that we can garner around DRTV campaign optimization. So it'd be great to just start off by getting a bit of background in terms of your role and what the team do in the donor recruitment department at the RSPCA.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, I've worked at the RSPCA in the donor recruitment team for 8 years. So my current role is a senior marketing manager, and in that time kind of worked across lots of different areas really in the team, kind of across different campaigns, channels, products, print, digital, direct response TV, telephony with you guys, kind of mobile giving and door-to-door and private sites as well. So my current role primarily focuses on direct response TV, and I've got a great team that kind of support me on the different areas of direct response TV, which spans kind of content and creative, everything around kind of media planning and kind of analysing results and performance and things like that. And then also donation journeys, so how people respond to our TV ads and our different campaigns. And I think as a team, we're responsible for bringing on new individual giving donors to the RSPCA, so with a financial gift, and giving them a really positive and kind of memorable first experience of the RSPCA, really trying to make them feel inspired and empowered when they come away from that kind of donation interaction with us. We have a few different like methods of giving that people can do as well. So we've got things like regular giving, sponsorship and lottery. So they're all kind of direct debit methods of giving. One-off donations, kind of through card payments and checks and cash. And all of those kind of efforts are to drive income so that the RSPCA can continue to support animals and animal welfare in the lots of different ways that we do.
Yeah, amazing. And I think that's been our experience working together, is that there's such a broad suite of campaigns that the RSPCA offers, and obviously within that various layers of products to try and entice, you know, different audiences into the charity. Obviously we started working together around 2018, and it's been a great journey since then. But for those who don't necessarily know kind of the inner workings of that, it'd be great to sort of describe how, at a time of what felt like probably new beginnings for the RSPCA in 2018, what that looked like at that time and how the relationship sort of evolved from there.
Yeah, definitely. I think new beginnings is a good way to describe it. I think in 2018, we kind of started working with yourselves as a call handling partner, and also with our media agency, John Ailings and Associates, or JAA, around that time as well. So new partnerships and kind of building from there, really. I think we already had a fairly well-established kind of direct response TV, regular giving and mobile giving campaign running, but we knew there was quite a big opportunity for growth in the campaign and lots of different other areas if we had the right partners working with us with kind of the right experience, expertise and drive as well. So yeah, it was a really important period for us, I guess, laying that groundwork to allow us to push for growth in future years so we could kind of grow our income and again grow the income we're putting towards animal welfare work at the RSPCA. And I think even at the stage of kind of setting up the existing campaigns on our DRTV area with Angel, I think your team came to the table with lots of fresh new ideas, and we looked at how we could build a much better supporter experience on our phone calls for those individuals that are responding to our TV ads, as well as achieve kind of the KPIs that we set out in our targets to achieve. So yeah, I think we're really happy that lots of these ideas have worked extremely well during that initial testing phase of trying new things, but also that we've kind of rolled them out and they've become the backbone of the calls on DRTV and our other telephony campaigns today as well. And I think that's kind of testament to the partnership approach and the experience you guys brought to the campaign setup and the scripting and all of the kind of elements that are really important with supporter experience and performance as well. So yeah, it's been continuous improvement, but lots of innovation and willingness to test new things as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think my experience has been that it's always been trying to set those dials as balanced as possible with, you know, performance and achieving KPIs so that, you know, we maximize income, but then also maintaining a really high quality supporter experience and quality. And it's been, I found it quite interesting seeing how those two things need to be, you know, balanced with each other, and how if you change one, it can have an impact on the other. So it's really been about achieving balance. And I think probably one of the foundations of that work that we do together is ensuring that every call feels like a really true representation of the RSPCA. And recently there's been a work stream around, you know, call structure and creating a success framework for the team. And I think that has been focused with balancing the performance, because we know that we need to achieve targets, because that means that the RSPCA can fuel its work and maximize the kind of the income, but also, like I say, that kind of quality frameworks that we're meeting compliance, we're giving the best possible experience possible. So how important is that consistency of experience to you from a brand perspective, and how do you think we've been able to maintain and evolve that over the time that we've worked together?
Yeah, so I think it's really important that we build a really strong, lasting relationship with our donors. I think, and you can't do that without having the right people involved, really, whether it's the agents that are taking the phone calls or the account team that's kind of working with us on the day-to-day. I think the thing we try to always remember is that the agents and those phone calls are often like a donor's first human interaction with the RSPCA, majority being new supporters. So they've seen that TV advert, and we want them to then, once they've donated, come away from a donation call feeling really good about that decision that they've just made, and that everything was kind of on their terms, and they were treated with kindness, gratitude, and that they now feel that they're genuinely part of the impact that the RSPCA are creating for animals. So we need to show them that they're really appreciated, they're listened to, and make them feel uplifted. And if we can do that, then obviously we've all done our job really well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are a lot of moving parts to coordinate within that, you know, and both within the call itself, but also with the way that the account is managed between us, because, you know, with any DRTV campaign, you've got the client, if you like, you guys, who have requirements and objectives to achieve. You've got the media agency who will lead on the media buying and strategy element. They have to work in collaboration with the telephone agency, in this case ourselves, to make sure that the expectations are managed in terms of, you know, call volumes, and that there's that kind of two-way feed of data all the way through to the fulfillment house, and, you know, who send out the welcome packs and thank the donors. So there's quite a lot of moving parts and components that go into that campaign. So I'm interested to know kind of how the structure of those check-ins and the collaboration between all involved has really allowed us to achieve the success that we've seen.
Yeah, I think that's the key word, really, is collaboration. I think all of the agencies we work with have always been really brilliant at collaboration and making sure kind of we share best practice, and whether it's on the day-to-day or looking to kind of future months and how to improve. I think we've only kind of continued to grow through that collaboration and explore those opportunities. And I think there's a few kind of, I guess, day-to-day processes and account processes that have been really useful to doing that. So whether it's our like weekly check-ins or our monthly review meetings, getting together quarterly to look at kind of more so the market, how the whole market is performing and any innovation that's going on, so we can forward plan and look at new opportunities, as I say. I think also kind of having quite clearly agreed processes has been really key. I think we always between ourselves kind of communicate exactly what's needed at the start of a new campaign, or kind of at the briefing stage, or at the start of the year when existing campaigns kind of roll over to the new year, and there's lots of kind of CRM setup that's required for that, as well as kind of documenting and reflecting on performance and KPIs quite regularly through your kind of Wings dashboard, through our weekly calls with your account team, and kind of through those meetings where we analyse performance. I think it helps us really identify where we're succeeding, but also look at those areas that we could make improvements on, and then kind of collaborate together with yourselves and JAA with the media on how we can make those improvements, really.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that feedback loop has definitely strengthened and evolved over time. And that's really felt like it's been at the heart of those improvements, because, as you say, you know, right from the start, we're really clear and collaborate on what the, you know, the objectives are, what the strategy is in terms of the creative, and how that can align with the script. And in my experience with RSPCA and also other clients that have really kind of got DRTV right, it's having that alignment right from the start in terms of what are we looking to achieve, how does that then feed into the way our brand is presented and the creative is presented on the TV, but also how do we then really nicely join that up with the call scripts that are used and the R strategies that are used, so that that experience that the supporter receives is seamless, and also that it's seamless as well when we collaborate then, because everyone's all on that one message of what we're looking to achieve, and there's feedback loops within that to, you know, identify how well or how not, you know, that that's performing, and how can we, you know, how can we improve. And I think being from our side, we certainly see that we've got to all collaborate and be as open as possible in order for the best, you know, kind of results to be achieved. Because if there's that kind of silo effect and that loop isn't there, then you don't find those kind of data-led optimization opportunities, you know, whether it be a certain creative not working or, you know, our strategy isn't working. If that feedback loop and those conversations aren't happening, it's very easy for those to be missed. And then, you know, that investment that's put into DRTV isn't really kind of maximized. So I definitely think that, like you say, that feedback loop for, you know, if there's any charities that are sort of listening to this and are thinking, how do we enter, you know, the DRTV space, or how do we, you know, improve our program? I think that the feedback loop and that collaboration would be something that is really fundamental into the success of that working.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think an extra element to that as well is just building that level of trust between everyone, and having the trust in each other to use our expertise in our different kind of fields to make the most of those campaigns, as you said. I think it also allows for open communication when extra focus is needed on certain like improvements, anything identified on campaigns that we feel like is a focus area.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that sort of feeds quite nicely into another area that I was interested to chat to you about, because I think collaboration and strong communication were really important during this time. Because I sort of remember back now about, you know, the uncertain times that the coronavirus pandemic brought, because we obviously had a rolling, you know, important DRTV program and other kind of activities with you guys. And it felt like certainly our relationship strengthened during a time where, you know, everyone was under immense pressure to kind of keep business as usual going, but also in their personal lives, and kind of the world was just a really uncertain time at that point. So I'm interested to kind of get your thoughts on how our partnership really strengthened during that uncertain time.
Yes, it was very tricky for lots of reasons, wasn't it? I think two things stand out for me when we think about kind of fundraising at that time. I think the first one was how quickly you and your team built a really detailed plan to maintain your services, to keep our fundraising campaigns that we did have live running. I think that's a huge feat and not an easy thing to do given all the changes that were happening. So I think when your agents were going to be required to answer our calls from home in a home working environment, I was really impressed with kind of how you approached the whole process really, and how quickly you managed to pull together a kind of a step-by-step kind of guide of what you guys would be doing to make sure that you could still fulfill our phone calls and take our donations. So yeah, there was obviously a huge amount operationally behind that that needed to be done. I don't know if you can explain how you pulled together all that and implemented it.
Yeah, sure. Not with any ease, no. As you can imagine. It was a very, you know, naturally a stressful time when looking at the challenge that was presented to us and the timescales involved. I think we quickly realised that, you know, we've got a team of over 100 fundraisers, and ultimately, you know, their lives were, you know, impacted by this, and it was really important for us to quickly respond to give them, you know, calmness, assurance and clarity. And I think what started our capability to, from a service perspective and from a kind of outward, you know, the communication with clients in terms of assuring them that we could continue, where that started was a really strong senior leadership from our owner and managing director. And he became much more hands-on in that period when we really needed it. And you know, he was communicating daily what the strategy was. We had, you know, really clear work streams with all of the senior management departments of, you know, whether it be the equipment that's needed, whether it be the processes for, you know, health and safety and well-being of the staff during that time, training and development continuing, and also then the kind of operational considerations that needed to be made very, very quickly around resourcing and kind of managing the workforce. All of those things we knew had to happen quickly. But I think the clarity of communication and the leadership that was shown, you know, from Darren and that fed through into you know, sort of my team, and we were able then to move forward at pace with clarity, knowing what needed to happen. And then we were just really, really kind of solution focused. Then it was right, you know, the number one priority is that actually, whilst all of this is happening in the world around us, the phones are actually ringing more than ever. because in what we do, they don't, you know, you can't just say we're going to take a break for a week, you know, reset. You know, these campaigns are planned in advance. You know, the investment is committed, you know months or weeks in advance at great levels. And we knew that we had, you know, a portfolio of clients that were heavily reliant on us. So that sort of energized us really to turn things around quickly. You know, we bought laptops, we really thoroughly investigated the kind of security requirements and how we could create the best environment for our agents and a working from home capacity to continue the service that we provide. So I think when I look back on it, you could kind of look at all the details of what we did and the equipment we bought and the security measures we put in place and all of the detail. But I think at the heart of it really was just strong leadership and really clear communication. And that, I think, then translated into our our client communication, and it just provided reassurance for our clients to know that yes, it's uncertain times, but we can continue. And then, you know, because people are at home in those times, kind of one of the few things you could do is watch the TV, you know, as a family. Actually, we saw a significant, you know, increase in volume across many of our campaigns. We were glad that we were able to respond that quickly, because actually, was, you know, a lot of things stopped. Our world just got busier through COVID. So yeah, I think that was my kind of reflection on it, really. I don't know about you.
Yeah, and I think that was something we're really grateful for. As you say, your phone lines were ringing more than ever, and it also meant that we could maintain and continue the level of fundraising that we were doing on TV and other campaigns that we were doing with you. And obviously it was extra important with the second area I was going to come on to. Actually, we had our RSPCA rescuers and kind of frontline staff were given key worker status during that time. So it was really important that we were able to continue our kind of essential animal rescue and emergency care and rehabilitation work. And to do that, we needed to continue our fundraising and support that work with income. So as well as having our kind of usual campaigns continue, we actually launched coronavirus emergency appeal, and we did that across our kind of TV and digital paid digital channels, and we were able to work with yourselves and other stakeholders involved to actually bring that to market in 2 weeks, which was a huge achievement. And I think it couldn't have been done without all of those steps that you guys took to get everyone set up from home to answer the calls for us and take those donations. Yeah, so we were extremely impressed with that side of things and really grateful for it. And when we briefed you guys, there was no hesitation in kind of going the extra mile to try and achieve that. It was a real collaborative approach. So I guess, can you explain how you approached, how did you feel when we briefed you and said we were going to go live in 2 weeks, and how you approached it?
Yeah, so I think it was definitely, because obviously that was in the midst of the, from our side, the operational shift of having a, you know, it's strange looking back, but you know, we used to open the door of the office and be 1900 fundraisers in an office, and you'd have that buzz of the noise. And, you know, we were kind of in the midst of shifting that and moving that remote. And then obviously we knew that not only with yourselves, but, you know, several other clients quite quickly realised that their services would be impacted directly by, you know, the pandemic. And therefore they had a story to tell from a fundraising perspective and a need for funds more than ever. I think from our side, the way that we achieved that was, it was a bit of a kind of just drop everything. And it's all hands to the pump, and focusing very much on, you know, to start with, often when you're setting a campaign up, you start with the ideation and kind of the, you know, there's a process. Whereas in those times, it was just a case of like, what do we need to do to just get this live and to be able to respond? And then we'll work back from that, you know, if we need to tweak things and evolve it, which I think we did on that, you know, campaign. But the starting point was just, let's just get ourselves set up to take the calls. What are the kind of the necessary steps to achieve that, get those done, and then build out from there. So I think it was just, again, that kind of solution focused approach and not getting sort of too caught up in the detail. It's just, let's just make this happen. Because I think that was a bit of the spirit in the country at the time. And I, you know, sort of cast back, it was like, what can I do? We're in this together. Like, you know, everyone's got a part to play. And I think we sort of, in a way, without realizing it, sort of took that ethos into our work and gave us a bit of purpose. It's like, right, you know, let's just make this happen and achieve something. So yeah, I think it was just that really kind of laser focus on the outcome which achieved it. So I guess, you know, happily, you know, we moved out of that kind of emergency period and things got back to normal. And I think, you know, since then we've really been able to drive a lot of innovation together. And one of the things that definitely stands out for us is how willing you guys are to test new ideas and, you know, as we've discussed, sort of collaborate on those efforts together over time. So could you talk a little bit about how you approach the innovation mindset and how we decide what is kind of the right things to test and the things that we can evolve.
Yeah, sure. I think we're really lucky to have a really strong culture of kind of innovation and testing and learning at the RSPCA. I think it's always allowed us to have that innovative mindset, really, whether it's testing on media or creative, looking at supporter journeys and trying to improve those through tests. I think everyone at the RSPCA really encourages it, including the leadership team. A real understanding that to maintain and grow fundraising and supporter experience, that you can't do that without a test and learn approach, really. I think there's an understanding that sometimes kind of we'll fail in places, but still learn from those tests and those failures. And the tests that are successful will also kind of drive improved performance and growth as well. And I think there's that level of trust there as well, that we are testing the right things and that we've got the knowledge and experience and the right partners to test in the right places to benefit our fundraising overall. So it does really filter down from kind of leadership all the way down into the different areas of work that we do at the RSPCA, and helps shape our marketing strategy and our tactics and then our relationships with agencies as well. Yeah, I think you guys do seem to obviously foster a really similar approach as well from the suggestions that you make to us and any opportunities you explore. So, from a leadership perspective, how do you go about it?
Sure. I think from our side, we find we've got quite a unique perspective in that, you know, there aren't a huge amount of marketing agencies that really specialise in the charity sector. And, you know, for us, we've got a portfolio of, you know, 50, 60 charities that we work with day in, day out. So that gives us a really interesting lens in terms of, you know, what's worked for the different charities and, you know, with this objective, you know, how can we achieve that in different ways? And, you know, over the years, we've been able to see you know, what works, what doesn't work, how those things can be adapted over time. And I think that coupled with we're very technology and data oriented, because we've got our own CRM, it gives us a lot of sort of flexibility and capability to, you know, test lots of different things, whether it be, you know, the phone numbers we use, the ask strategies that we use, the script tests, you know, the reporting, all of it is very customizable. So the combination of knowing what works for different, you know, charities and having that unique perspective in the sector, coupled with the capability from a technical perspective to do lots of different things, it gives us the platform to be able to really test and learn and innovate. And I think the way that we encourage our team to do that from a leadership perspective with those tools is we try not to kind of over define the roles or, you know, processes. We have really clear processes for repeatable tasks like, you know, setting new clients up or managing relationships day to day. But in terms of the role that we encourage our, you know, people to do, and the way that we encourage them to bring their whole self to work is very much a case of go and make of it what you can. You know, I can speak to that from my experience. You know, I started off as a fundraiser, and from quite an early stage in my time at Angel, it was very much a case of you can, you know, your role and your career can evolve into what, you know, whatever you like, and you can make the role, you know, as long as it achieves the objectives for Angel that we're looking to deliver, it encourages our clients to grow and to be, you know, satisfied with the service they get. What that looks like doesn't matter so much. We're quite fluid with that. And I've tried to kind of continue that ethos with my team, you know, from a client management perspective of, you know, the way that you account manage can be different, you know, from, you know, from one person to another, from one client to another, because, you know, I don't want to kind of say, no, this is how you do it, you know, put people in a box and say that, you know, that's your role, just do that, and then, you know, and then don't go outside of that. Yeah. Because I think that really discourages innovation and that testing and learn mindset. So I'd say from our side, in the simplest terms, it's technology and capability in that space. It's being able to see insights from across a broad range of charities and then plugging into that a fluid mindset in terms of how you approach your role day to day, and not being so set in, you know, set in your ways. And then that encourages and fosters innovation, I think.
Yeah. And I think that technology that you've been able to provide to us, like your Wings dashboard, for example, it helps us with deciding what to test. Kind of data is really key to making those decisions. And I think whether it's kind of looking at drop off in conversion rates on the phone or media or creative kind of underperforming or part of the sports journey, we think we can improve and become more engaging. I think from there, looking at that data really helps shape the test and isolates that particular variable that we want to improve, and kind of means that we can, if we're doing a test, we can learn something meaningful. I think that's where kind of working together works really well as well. Your expertise and kind of market insight helps identify those areas, and together we kind of work on and suggest tactics to improve them. And I think it also helps with like a longer term view as well. I think keeping an eye on those market trends that we look at in our kind of quarterlies and the other areas of our work, I think really help us look kind of medium to longer term at what our strategy should be and any shifts in behaviour or anything that we need to consider for the long term to start testing and growing our knowledge about and spot opportunities really in that side of things.
Yeah, that's really interesting actually. And you know, respect of wings is quite a good example, because when I first started managing the account management team, the reports were done manually. And what we found was that the team was spending so much time compiling reports and doing data administration that they weren't able then to have time or kind of the headspace to focus on some of those other things like the trends, the recommendations, and actually looking at the data. You know, because I think once you're repeatedly just compiling data and reporting, sometimes it can get then difficult to kind of step back and look at that data and go, what is it telling me? Yeah. And how can I improve it? So the Winged reporting platform obviously automates our reporting, and in doing so, it allows the team to have, they used to report, you know, do data administration, be reporting to 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon. And then by that time, it's a case of, you know, getting on top of, you know, setting new projects up, etc. And that was kind of the time they had available. Whereas utilizing that technology, we've been able to make those reports more meaningful and kind of tell a bit more of a visual story as well. But it also frees up the time then to make those improvements and, you know, go from being kind of data administration into, you know, a real kind of, you know, project manager type role and almost consultancy in a way of, you know, this is what, you know, we can do to improve a campaign. So I think, yeah, that's quite a good example of continuing to evolve and not just, you know, kind of being happy with the status quo, so to speak. And I guess that brings us quite nicely into VOD. So for anyone that isn't familiar with that acronym, it stands for Video On Demand. And it's a new kind of lean into fundraising for the RSPCA. And what it means is when we talk about linear advertising, which is where adverts are put on the television on your traditional channels of ITV, Channel 4, and they appear. So if you were to, you know, watch kind of terrestrial television and an advert, you know, went to an ad break and then the charity's creative is displayed in that break, that would be linear advertising. Video on demand is displayed on streaming services like Disney Plus, you know, Sky Stream, those sorts of channels. And it represents a different method for reaching supporters, and it attracts a different audience. So I guess, Owen, from your perspective, what was kind of the thinking and the decision-making behind kind of moving away from traditional linear advertising and adopting that video on demand strategy?
Yeah, I think is, I guess, an example of our longer-term strategic and innovative focus, really. I think linear continues to be a really important kind of form of TV advertising for us, and we still have a really vital regular giving campaign on linear, but whilst VOD's kind of been around for a little while now, it's still fairly new if you compare it to how long linear TV's been around. So I think viewing habits are incrementally starting to change, and we know that more and more people are watching VOD and on platforms like All4 and Sky, as you say, and there's been quite a stark increase more recently with the emergence and growth of Netflix, Disney Plus, etc. So I think together with yourselves and JAA, we've really developed a strong linear TV fundraising program, but we felt it was important to start exploring VOD. There's lots of challenges behind doing so. I think the media costs on VOD have always been much higher in comparison to linear, but we've always been mindful of that kind of changing viewing habits and keeping our eye out for any opportunities to break into the VOD market, really. And I think JAA were able to kind of negotiate some media costs on the broadcaster VOD providers, so that's kind of All4 and Sky, for example, that were the right level for us to be comfortable with testing, enough so that we felt we could drive kind of efficient performance, which is obviously one of the most important things, but also to kind of learn through using our most successful TV ads about learning about the media landscape, the audiences, the viewing habits and direct response performance that we might be able to achieve on VOD. So yeah, we launched on VOD a few years ago now and very incrementally to test and learn, really. I guess set ourselves up and get ourselves ready for the continued shift to viewing video on demand and viewing content and TV shows through those platforms and start to try and reduce our reliance on linear TV. I think the results really varied, to be honest with you. We saw some months were absolutely fantastic, driving better CPAs and ROIs, even better than we were seeing on linear, and then other periods of poor performance. But again, it comes back to slowly trying to learn and understand which VOD providers kind of perform best for us, things like media seasonality and our creative performance, and all those things that you want to learn when you're doing a test. And over time, we've been able to use that kind of insight and to build results that have really started to be a bit more consistent. And we've really grown in confidence with our advertising on VOD. So we kind of went from that initial testing phase a few years ago to now we're kind of always on VOD across some banker providers like Sky. And then we're kind of trying to test new ones as well as they come into the market and become available to us. So yeah, it's been a really interesting couple of years, and VOD remains a key part of our strategy. And I don't think we'd be able to be in this position where we are on VOD without kind of collaborating with yourselves and JAA a few years ago to start looking to the future really and what we should be doing to prepare for the changing shifts in audience behaviour. I think the partnership approach has really paid off for the campaign. And I guess from like a call handling perspective, do you see any key differences with kind of the VOD campaigns compared to linear, or any audiences or the type of calls you receive and the donations that are given?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the audience is probably the biggest, noticeable change. And again, it will naturally evolve as as VOD as a channel matures, and also the kind of the capabilities in terms of targeting evolve. But generally speaking, now the audience that we see who will pick the phone up, the series of events are that it would be someone watching, especially if it's daytime advertising, terrestrial in linear TV in the daytime, that will watch one of those programs, will watch the adverts, see a telephone number, pick the phone up. And that would be their method of choosing to donate. That's typically, a much older audience that would respond and behave in that way. So, that audience typically is, in the case of RSPCA, for example, has quite a strong understanding of the RSPCA's brand because, of their age and also the societal nature of the charity. So that element, usually comes through quite strongly. And obviously there's a way to communicate with someone that is older in terms of tonality, pace, etc., and the type of information that you would share. But if you translate that and kind of compare that with a video on demand audience, obviously that audience is much more varied. Mm-hmm. And I think that variety of responder will only continue to increase with more and more people shifting to video on demand services, because the amount of content that's available on those platforms is so varied. The investment, for example, Netflix, you can see that they've got everything from sports documentaries to, crime dramas, thrillers, old series that they've bought. And the amount of content is so varied, and more people are adopting it, that the audience mix is, again, kind of represents that. And then again, the nature of conversation that we would have would vary more. But again, I think that is still something that is in its earlier stages and will evolve over time. So it'll be interesting to see how, because I think one of the interesting things for us is how intelligent we'll be able to get with both media buying, but then also how you adapt scripts and engagement journeys based on the kind of the content and the space that someone's responded to. And I think from what I've read, that is the next decade that will evolve immensely. So it's quite interesting and exciting that whilst one channel might be tapering, the audience isn't necessarily moving away, they're just going somewhere else. And I think that's been a real testament to the RSPCA that you've been able to anticipate that and move with the times in advance, so that's not caught you out. You're kind of actively aware of that shift and you're responding to it in the real time. So I think that should hopefully stand you in good stead in terms of meeting supporters where they are for the long term. So one of the, going back to kind of innovation, I suppose, and looking at how we've continued to drive that, one of the things, and this probably will be even more effective as that kind of that VOD journey progresses because of the nature of the audience. But one of the things obviously we've been using to complement calling strategies and to drive results is SMS, so that we don't miss prospective supporters that say we aren't able to contact or convert on the call. How have you found that optimization has enhanced the DRTV campaign?
Yeah, so I think it's been a really interesting one. I think it's a good example of how innovation doesn't always need to be big flashy ideas. Sometimes it's looking at the data and looking at those kind of small meaningful changes that can unlock bigger gains gradually over time. I think I really enjoy kind of digging into the data and trying to figure out where we can make those small improvements. And I think our use of SMS or text messaging is I'd say, a good example of that. I think we kind of, through analysing the different metrics of the donation or the donor's response journey, we were able to kind of identify some really interesting things, really. So with things like opt-out rates and contact rates, we were looking at those and thinking, actually, we've got a pool or a data set of prospective donors that responded to our DRTV ads, but they haven't gone on to eventually convert. So we've lost them as a lead. With audiences considering making a donation or a purchase, I think, but not quite getting there. It's an inevitable part of any marketing campaign, but by identifying those groups and trying to reduce those drop-off rates, I think we kind of hypothesized that it could make a significant improvement to the campaign's performance. So it's exactly what we did on the DRTV campaign. So whilst responders weren't making it to a donation, we knew that our advertising must have generated an emotional response and the desire to donate in that first place. So we had to think about the reasons for why they may not have kind of got there and made that donation, and tried to categorise them into groups to better understand those reasons, really. So an example of one of those groups would be a group of people who, despite initially being happy to, they made the text indicating that they wanted a call back to set up a donation. They actually changed their mind about speaking to someone and decided not to answer their phone. So that's one really key group there that is a fairly large volume of people that have kind of made the decision not to answer their phone, which obviously we have a contact strategy with you guys and do our best to reach those individuals, but it still presents an opportunity even if they haven't answered their phone. And then through identifying those groups, we were able to develop kind of different text messages we could send them to kind of make one last appeal for a donation, really, through our website. So it takes place through a combination of sending the text if we can't reach a supporter, or your agents offer to send this text to people who are speaking to them on the phone, but either kind of, say, change their mind, or they have an inquiry, aren't quite ready to donate there and then. And we considered that those groups might be more comfortable with donating in a different way or on their own time instead of on the phone. So we rolled that out as a test in terms of sending a text message to all those different types of groups. We included some text message kind of copy on there just to remind individuals how much we would appreciate a donation and how much the animals desperately still need their help. And we included a trackable website URL as well, just so we could see that any individuals that did decide, actually, yeah, I will visit the website and make a donation, we could track those individuals. And that was really key to being able to understand the volume of kind of conversions, income, other metrics that the test was able to achieve. And the good news is it's been a real success. I think in Q1 this year, for example, I think we've driven around 8% additional regular gifts and an extra 2% cash gifts on top of our usual volumes that we would get through the standard response journey that a supporter would go through. So I think it's a good example that shows how kind of strong collaboration and a mindset for really getting into that detail and the data can be really beneficial to the campaign's performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's one of those sort of marginal gains approaches. And I use the term reluctantly because I hoped that Dave Brailsford would come into my football team, Manchester United, and employ those strategies and we'd be seeing better improvement for it. But I think, kind of joking aside, the marginal gains approach on mature and kind of ongoing programs is so important because, as you rightly said, once you get into the detail and you almost work out, you know, what's the value of one more sign-up, 10 more sign-ups, really those marginal gains of the leads that you can't contact or the leads that you can't convert, it only takes a relatively small number of those, especially when you're operating at, you know, medium or large size volumes and the campaigns are rolling. You know, if you can pick up 5, 10, 15 more conversions a month and, you know, over the course of a year, that is actually worth, you know, the compound effect of those marginal gains is worth so much. And if you can pick up 3, 4, 5 of those in different ways, then all of a sudden, actually, that can be quite transformational optimization. And I think for us, because we've worked on the campaign for so long, some of the bigger wins we've achieved now in terms of, you know, maximizing the scripts, making sure that those day-to-day processes are there. So we know that there's a benchmark level of performance that reasonably we can expect, but the gains above that are marginal. And you have to, like you said, really get into the data, really look at those, you know, the call outcomes. From our side, one thing that's useful is every call that we make or take, we log an outcome for it, and we try and keep those consistent across all of our clients because we can do kind of mass analysis then and benchmark and see, okay, you know, if someone doesn't want to give their bank details, or if they put down the phone, or if they say, I'm not interested because of X, Y, Z, what strategies for each of those, you know, based on what they've told us or what action they've taken, what could we do differently from a script, technology, follow-up perspective, whatever it might be, to either, you know, warm them back up for contact in the future or ideally convert them there and then.
Mm.
So it's been really exciting, and, you know, we're quite surprised really at quite how many donations we picked up from that SMS strategy. We sort of thought, yeah, we might get a few and it's worth doing, but actually it's quite substantial when you look at the numbers. So that's been a real gain, and certainly one that, you know, we can build on moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. And I think your reference there to the call outcomes groupings really helped us understand and put those people into those different groups that I mentioned earlier and identify which donors or which prospective donors might still be open to giving, whether it's kind of on that phone call or actually in the future, and us making it as easy as possible for them to do that by sending them a text with a link to the website that where they can quite quickly go through our website donation process ended up being really beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's really exciting that we're still managing to find those gains in what, you know, is a really strong program. And I guess just before we wrap up then, looking ahead, we're now in a great position. We've got lots of channels live that are performing really well. What do you think is next for the RSPCA in terms of evolving its approach continually for supporter recruitment and development?
Yeah, I think looking ahead, our products, our different products and our product mix is something we're really focusing on at the moment. So we're particularly focusing on lottery and sponsorship, which we relaunched as part of our fresh new brand last year. So our aim's really to optimise and grow them even further this year to continue expanding our product mix and portfolio. So we want to have those different products in the market and optimize them as much as we can to really offer a wide range of different ways to give to the RSPCA for audiences that have different interests or want to give differently, basically. I think we're still really focused and committed to driving efficiency on our and continue to learn on our Join the Rescue kind of regular giving product as well. Those small incremental improvements that we talked about earlier within the telephony side of things, but also kind of our media and creative and donation journeys. I think ultimately they can lead to more donors coming on board as we establish. So, and it's really more important than ever as well at the moment, with economic factors kind of causing cost of living challenges for much of the public, meaning less disposable income. I think inevitably results in fundraising are becoming really tough for charities. So I think those small gains become even more important for maintaining kind of income. And I think technology as well, so really keen on kind of innovation and AI. I know we've been working together with you guys on the use of AI and a tool to better understand our donors that are donating on the phones. I don't know if you want to chat about the kind of software or tool that we're aiming to use.
Yeah, absolutely. The way that it works in simplest terms is we can set markers within our telephone script for segments of a call, if you like, that we want to analyze so that we don't have to kind of put PI data through through AI, and also just to kind of keep it as clean as possible and focused on the areas that we want to learn in. So that's kind of like a stopping marker of, say, the point at which we know we're going to ask someone about their motivations for giving. And what we can then do is, if that's 100 calls, 1,000 calls, 10,000 calls, we can trim those call recordings and then plug them into an AI tool. And the AI tool will convert those spoken, so those audio call recordings, into text. And by doing so, it then allows us to obviously work with partners like you guys to analyze that text to give us insight that we need for both improving the campaign performance and learning about why people are responding, for instance, with DRTV, you know, helping to understand what it is that they say when we say, what was it that inspired you to respond to our TV advert? Well, that's such, you know, valuable information to learn about supporters. And of course, you can capture it. You know, an agent can capture that, or you can have a focus group and they can sort of anecdotally share that with you. But if you can actually, you know, critically evaluate all of those calls en masse using AI, then, you know, that's a real kind of interesting innovation. It's still in its sort of earlier embryonic stages, but it's certainly something that we can see a lot of value in. So yeah, it's very exciting. And I guess from our side, we see AI complementing human interaction, because I don't think really you can fundraise effectively without emotional intelligence and relationship building. That's really at the heart of face-to-face and telephone fundraising. But you can use AI to, you know, save time on rudimentary tasks. And also for this, you know, it's a real vehicle for getting insights en masse for, you know, to complement your telephone fundraising. So that's kind of the view that we've taken to this, and we're excited to see where it...
Yeah, no, we're really excited as well. I think any tool that can help us better understand our donors en masse, as you say. I think the donation calls are really full of passionate insightful and generous conversations between donors and call handlers, and it's currently kind of quite untapped, that information, which I think it really can be used to help better understand our donors and help us provide them with a much better supporter experience. And also that improved understanding around things like what resonated with them in the advert they saw, or what impact they want their donation to have, their love for kind of certain animals, or the emotions that they're feeling, their attitudes, kind of values and beliefs or opinions towards animal welfare. I think all that type of insight can really help us build a better picture of who our audiences are and why they're donating to the RSPCA. And I think obviously it's insight that's anonymous at an individual supporter level, but and that kind of makes sure we can maintain the security and privacy. But I think what we're able to do with it is group responses into certain categories on things like motivations to give. And by doing that, we can better understand those different reasons that people are giving to us and really optimise and provide them with a supporter experience that's focused around those areas that they're really interested in. And I think in the past, the only way to kind of obtain that from calls would be manual call listening, which you'd then obviously have to log the data, which would be hugely time consuming and resource consuming to do that at scale. So yeah, it's really exciting to be able to increase the number of, or increase the insight we're able to get from a high number of calls.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's hopefully the reliability of that data and the volume of it that is so interesting, because you know, you can get that in a matter of minutes compared to, like you said, it would be hours on end of call listening. So that's where the beauty of AI kicks in. And I think, you know, from the outset, we've identified some guardrails that we can put in place to, you know, protect privacy and compliance while still utilising the benefit that it brings. Yeah, it feels like a really exciting initiative, and one that I'm sure will evolve and give us lots of rich, you know, rich data as we go forward.
Yeah, definitely. And is there any other ways that you're kind of helping charities? I know we mentioned the economic climate being tricky for fundraising at the moment. I think this tool is just one of many, I'm sure, that can help with fundraising. Is there anything else that you're doing with your charities in that area?
Yeah, there's quite a few initiatives that we're pursuing at the moment to respond to market challenges. A couple of areas that we've identified as potentially low-hanging fruit are gift aid calling has been one. You know, we've ran a really successful gift aid campaign for the RSPCA and unlocked, I think we're probably pushing £500,000 of gift aid income. There's a report that's been circulating recently that has identified potentially upwards of £500 million of unclaimed gift aid for charities in the UK market. And, you know, at a time where, you know, lots of charities are restructuring and having to make difficult decisions and fundraising programs are being stretched, having that ability to tap into what is potentially quite lucrative and substantial income that not only will help going forward, but obviously you can claim it backwards going back 4 years. So that's an initiative that we are actively pursuing with several, you know, partners to try and find, you know, income streams that are, you know, hopefully quickly accessible at the time that they need it. And coupled with that is that whilst we are certainly seeing challenges with certain audiences being able to afford to give with committed gifts, the DRTV space isn't accessible for lots of charities, based on their size or their budgets. We have developed our cost per acquisition model, where we kind of allow charities to acquire donors end-to-end on a lead generation model and have more certainty over what the cost per acquisition looks like, because we've got, what we identified is we've got a lot of infrastructure and the ability to generate leads and acquire donors at scale, and being able to plug charities into that and kind of give them the assurance of a cost per acquisition model has been really successful. And, you know, we're now acquiring around 1,000 regular donors a week on that model, and it's helping to provide a bit of a different entry point for acquisition to charities who can't kind of utilize different channels because they're too expensive or there's high barriers to entry, etc. And I think the final one of those kind of service and campaign opportunity points is in legacy giving, that kind of, again, whilst day-to-day affordability challenges affect, you know, people's ability to give, there are a lot of studies that show that people, that there's going to be a shift in wealth as generations evolve, and also that people that might not have money available to donate day to day might have, you know, substantial amounts of money in assets. And coupled with that, people are really kind of becoming more receptive to the concept of legacy giving. That market is now worth kind of over £4 billion to UK charities. I saw JAH posted the other day saying that is set to grow further by another sort of 50% in the next decade. So that's a massive market. One of the, again, talking about low-hanging fruit, one of the kind of ways that we've been able to allow charities to tap into that market is by picking up the phone and engaging with their warm donor base about the benefit to the charity, and in some cases with the free will service, the benefit to them of giving through a legacy and how important that is to kind of long-term income for charities. So I think it's probably the combination of those kind of new service and campaign models that we're continuing to evolve that's allowing some of our clients to kind of navigate and kind of deal with those challenges that, as you rightly say, are affecting many, many charities in the market at the moment. But no, I think, it's been a really interesting and exciting journey so far. And I think my takeaway from our conversation today is that collaboration, joined up working, and the motivation to continually improve campaigns through that communication and partnership is what is conducive to long-term DRTV campaign optimization. And it's been a great conversation. Thank you so much again, Anne, for joining.
I thank you for having me, and hopefully people find this useful. Even if one person finds it useful, then we've done a good job, haven't we?
Exactly right. It was worth it. So no, thank you, and hope everyone's enjoyed listening.
Brilliant. Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Anne.